Audioversity, the voice of Reichman University.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
This is the Friendly Face-Off
with Zara Balloon and Jonah Hoffman.
Welcome to the Friendly Face-Off, the show where the left and the right clash over the political now. I'm your host, Jonah Hoffman, and with me always is Zara Balloon. Hey, Zara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good as well. What are we going to be debating about this episode?
Well, I hope you've got your gloves on, because this week we'll be diving into the topic of South Africa.
I'm ready when you are. So, Zara, we're back.
I feel like I need to use the word how's it for this one.
How's it doing? Yeah. Wait, is that what type of how's it?
No, how's it in South Africa means like, how are you? So, how's it?
That's actually really smart and practical. But yeah, I mean, we are talking about South Africa today, so it would be appropriate.
I figured it's my turn to educate you a little bit. We spoke about things like Trump and Biden, and I figured, what better than to educate you about my country?
Well, we did talk about Democratic backsliding in our last recording, so we get to talk about it today.
I feel like the way to my heart is Democratic backsliding.
I'll tell that to the next guy that takes you out on a date. Alrighty, so we have a very special guest joining us today.
Yeah, I figured that two are better than one with Africans. So
one
I brought my amazing friend.
Like the other. Yeah.
Okay. I brought a friend, Alex. It's Alex Sachs.
Hello. Hi. Nice to meet you all. great day today.
It is. You know, the weather's finally become nicer, I'll say. It was a good breeze
well,
today.
Well, you're from Seattle. You like...
I love the rain and the cold.
Exactly.
I thrive off darkness.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I'm Batman.
So, Alex. Jonah, how much do you know of South Africa? Let's start with this.
Let's see. My extent of knowledge of South Africa comes from the entirety of the movie of Lethal Weapon 2. Especially that scene where Murdoch is trying to book a ticket to South Africa and the travel agent is just looking at him like, sir? That's not a good idea for you right now. And that whole scene was hilarious. Other than that, I know the flag. It's very pretty. One of my favorite flags.
I showed you the flag.
And then, Avengers Age of Ultron. That was in South Africa with a whole Hulkbuster fight. That's the extent of knowledge I have about South Africa. I know there was an apartheid. I know there was a whole bunch of stuff going on with that.
And you know about the Shabins we saw in class, that as well.
Yeah, I do remember that. Oh, and the movie District 9. Okay. District 12, whatever that one was, where like aliens...
So movies. You know District only from 9. Movies.
Yeah, where aliens invade South Africa and there's like the slums and stuff. I remember that.
And Chappie.
I love Chappie. I saw a retrospective on it the other day. But yes, that's the extent of my knowledge of South Africa.
So,
you guys have your work cut out for you.
Okay. So obviously you mentioned the apartheid. Again, I just want to also preference this and a little bit of a disclaimer that nor Alex nor myself are experts in South Africa and what is going on. We are just two South Africans kind of trying to explain in the most basic way what is going on currently and what happened previously in our past. So take everything we say with a grain of salt, and coming from two government kids in first year that don't know much.
Right.
Well, Alex knows more than me, but to the extent of we're not experts.
I do know some of the history of South Africa, if you'll indulge me for a second here. I know Germany had control of it, I think in the early 1900s, if I'm correct.
No.
No?
Alex's face.
What do you mean no?
You think about Namibia.
Hearts of Iron lied to me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Alex, why don't you give him a little bit of a
let's do the history of South Africa starting from like 1900-ish, I guess.
Okay, so basically, you're going back to the 18th century, actually, but
okay, fine.
Late 18th century. So basically, you had German Southwest Africa, which is basically Namibia today. They controlled that area, so it was a former German colony. Then, you know, World War One happened and, you know, they took everything away from Germany as a punishment. And sort of there was like this whole transfer to the British. And then, you know, South Africa became an independent state. Well, became known as the Union of South Africa and gained its sovereignty in 1910. And sort of like the British took a back seat in the governance of South Africa as a colony because of, they... the British Empire started to go into a bit of a decline.
The sun started to set on the British Empire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And then throughout the, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, World War II happened. So then the British Empire and the Commonwealth was majorly
affected
and weakened. And then the British sort of said, okay, let's let go of South Africa. We can't afford it anymore. We're already trying to retain India. And, you know, they lost India. And then in 1948, South Africa had its first democratic elections. However, these democratic elections
weren't so democratic.
So it was elections in quotes.
Yes, right. It was elections for the settlers, let's just say.
It was an oligarchy. It was a democratic, quote-unquote, election for the oligarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it was basically all the settlers from Europe who got to vote. No one else really. And who they voted in was the National Party, which was the party that created the apartheid.
Yeah.
Okay.
The NP government.
Yes.
Okay. So that's good to know for my basis of knowledge, because so therefore every historical game and novel I've ever read has lied to me. That's great.
Yeah.
That's good to know. So, yeah, that's basically the history up until you get to actually the apartheid itself.
Yeah, and then obviously we know we're not going to really get into what happened during apartheid, but we know that there was segregation between whites and non-whites, and up until 1994.
You're in Israel,
1994. I don't know, I was just thinking like World War for a second. 94 was our first actual democratic elections. Also before that, there was lots and lots of discontent and fighting and a lot of violence that was happening in South Africa, obviously due to the unhappiness of the situation. And we know that in 94, we had Nelson Mandela elected into our first president and, well, of the Democratic Republic, no, not Democratic, the Republic of South Africa.
Well, I also think there is an important context that we need to give to apartheid South Africa, was that one of the major reasons why apartheid South Africa was able to stay in for so long was because of the Cold War. So basically, the national government in South Africa argued that the opposition parties within South Africa were communists,
right.
The Red Menace.
Correct, correct. Right.
So, yeah, that's something I know happened in a lot of countries during this time period. Obviously affected each in different ways. It even happened in America to an extent with McCarthyism, where it was basically, if your neighbor's mowing his lawn at 4 in the morning and you don't like it, you could call the police station and say, hey, I got a communist over here. They come in and arrest him. So, yeah, that's a very shrewd political move to just kind of say, oh, you're our enemy, you're the communist, us versus them, if you recall properly from comparative politics. Also, while you guys were talking, I Googled, it is the Republic of South Africa. So, yeah, because I love Google. Anyway, continue, sorry.
So, yeah, basically they kept in this this apartheid government system until 94 because, you know, it eventually became unsustainable as the Cold War started collapsing because of, you know, the Soviet Union going into decline. And South Africa, you know, couldn't maintain itself financially. It was waging a war in Angola, in which it was technically actually just waging a war against Cuba and the USSR, not Russia. Well, not Russia, but, you know, a whole bunch of states.
Proxy war.
Yeah, it was a proxy war, and the apartheid state couldn't maintain itself. It was just too financially unfeasible. And, you know, it also, on top of that, had to maintain incredibly strict martial law against the peoples of South Africa because they were incredibly discontent with the government. So, you know, it was a massive melting pot.
Also, within apartheid, there were a few laws I just wanted to figure I'd bring up, like, for instance, the Bantu Education Act, where this act basically, the schooling was different for whites and non-whites, meaning that if you were a white South African, you would be educated, like a general full education, up until the age of 18. Whereas non-whites would have the Bantu education, which was very basic, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, just like a basic education only for jobs that would be quote-unquote tailored for non-whites,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken, Alex.
Yeah,
like no, they wouldn't do maths to a full extent. There was no
everything language was and cut
everything
short.
Was taught in Afrikaans, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and that also creates this whole set of issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're cut, it's definitely a strategy, which I know other countries do employ, yeah. which is you cut your education short to make your quote-unquote, heavy emphasis on quote-unquote enemies here, whatever, or whoever you're trying to, you know, oppress or whatever, yeah. to make sure they can't come up against
and
you.
Again, why am I mentioning this is because even today we see what these kind of laws, for instance, the Bantu Education Act, has caused in society today.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured it's very important to understand that there was such a social divide up until even 94 when elections came in that still haven't been dealt with today. And there's a massive economic, social, the divide is so, so great that it still hasn't been resolved today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I think another important point for the Bantu Education Act, and I know I keep on going back to communism and the Cold War, but this is...
Alex loves communism.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
So basically, because we're going to come back to it later about the South African economy, the ANC was fundamentally more of a communist party.
Okay.
And this is, you know, the ANC, African National Congress was right. the main opposition party to the National Party in the apartheid era.
Does that get confusing because they both have national in the title?
So you have the National Party, which right. was the apartheid government.
Okay.
And then you have the African National Congress.
Okay.
The ANC.
So ANC
who at that time was led by Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela. Okay.
Yes. So they had massive connections back to Moscow. A lot mm-hmm. of their leaders were actually trained in Moscow. So, mm-hmm. for example, their military wing, called Umkhonto we Sizwe.
I'm going to try to pronounce that.
Yeah, don't try. Going to butcher it.
Give it a try.
I'll pass. I honestly can't.
Okay.
Well, they were trained by the USSR.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the ANC now, it's got massive ties to what is called the SACP, the South African Communist Party, and the trade unions of South Africa.
COSATU.
Yes, namely COSATU, Congress of South African Trade Unions.
Yeah.
Okay.
COSATU.
Yeah, so it's a trade union type of thing. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's in the title, obviously, but yeah.
So basically, this movement united into the United Democratic Movement. In South Africa, and the UDM came in, and they were really the main people who brought down the apartheid government in 94 and got Mandela released in 91.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that was the year that Mandela was released. That's something I remember.
Long Walk to Freedom?
Yeah, actually.
Have you seen it?
No. They tried to, I remember my English teacher in like seventh grade.
Yeah.
That was one of the options for us to like watch in class because we had a choice of what to learn, and the class I voted for that one actually because I was like, huh, sounds interesting. I didn't know what it was. I looked it up later, but the class decided to like watch like a Titanic based movie, not the Titanic movie. We were seventh graders. That's not something you watch in seventh grade, but they voted for something Titanic related instead of that.
I still think Invictus is one of our best South African movies.
Oh, easily.
Anyway.
Well, let me, because I also went a bit off topic with the Bantu education. I just wanted to say as a minor point, with this Bantu Education Act, it created an incredibly uneducated population, creating incredibly devoted support base for the ANC and their various allies.
I think that, again, so the ANC gets voted in as the government and as from 94 up until now, mm-hmm. the ANC has still been in power and in government, just with different leaders. And I think that it's more just a fear. I think that there's this instillment that has been put into South Africa, especially the non-white South Africans from the apartheid, that if you vote anything besides the ANC, we're going to go back to the old ways of apartheid.
Oh, so it's-
people have basically have it instilled within themselves of like this deep root of a fear of change from when we converted to a democracy.
So it's fear mongering, is kind of at what it was at the beginning, at least, and now it's just kind of
I wouldn't say the norm, but
it's become second nature.
It's almost been enrooted in people.
Right. Okay.
If I understood what you were trying to say correctly.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Anyway, yeah, but no, it's, again, global maybe not be the right word from what I'm understanding, but it's kind of become, like Zara said, kind of second nature almost, where it's become instilled. And that can definitely happen in these cases where it's like threatening, and originally it would be fear mongering if it's like you guys are saying, like that. But that at that point just becomes second nature for people to listen to it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think also to further add is that a lot of, you know, the ANC ideologies of socialism and communism and, well, the South African Communist Party and COSATU becomes much easier to instill on uneducated people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's sort of like you saying, how come these people who treated you so badly, which I have to, like you say, no, the apartheid was a terrible crime, terrible, right. terrible crime. How come these people can retain so much wealth from our suffering and we have nothing? So the ANC then comes in and says, well, let's institute such acts like expropriation without compensation on land.
Mm-hmm.
Basically taking away the land from white South African farmers, for example.
I think also we're jumping the boat. I think let's explain how we've gotten to this point. I think, so, like we were saying, we're falling apart today.
We really are. This is more of a serious episode.
Again, elections happen within a new democracy. South Africa tries to form itself in the best way possible. They build a constitution, which is one of the best constitutions in the world,
mm-hmm.
When you're looking at constitutions.
I remember I had to read the South African constitution for junior year when we were studying constitutions for class. Mm-hmm. We read the United States, we read South Africa's, and then to compare what a country with no constitution looks like, we actually used Israel because it only has basic laws. Yeah, correct.
And I think that we had a great start in building a democracy, and the only problem is that we were so unaware of how to obtain and how to build,
mm-hmm.
and continue, if that makes sense.
Right.
Let me word that properly. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that our facilities within South Africa never grew with the democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So as, you know, you're carrying on as a country, you're meant to keep up with your maintenance and things of, you know, your general
roads, water filtration, exactly. basic services.
Also, to mention that in South Africa, our electricity is nationalized, meaning, again, back to what Alex was trying to say earlier, a lot of ANC's way of governing has socialist policies within it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is nationalization of our electricity company called Eskom. So Eskom basically for the last 30 years, 28, 29 years, between, my maths is not good, from 1994 until now.
We're about almost 30 years out.
Yeah. Hasn't really done the work and the upgrades that are needed to function. So for instance, one of the biggest problems in South Africa to date is the fact there's no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a term for the fact that we have periods without electricity called load shedding.
Right. This kind of goes against what we learned in comparative politics, which is one of the theories of democratic and economic sort of processes and development is that as a country gets more democratic, its economic abilities are supposed to grow.
And its institutions are meant to strengthen.
However, it would seem South Africa has kind of remained an exception to this almost, because this kind of applies true. You see this in a lot of other countries, Israel, for instance, and most Western democracies in Europe and such, where this has applied to even countries in South America, where these Latin countries transition from communism to democracy, or capitalist countries that with that becomes more democratic and they've become more economically developed.
And again, we didn't obviously come from communist background. We came from an oligarchy. We transitioned from oligarchy to democracy.
Right.
And, well, polyarchy, if we want to be to the most polyarchic state that we could. And I just think that because we were in this area of how to accept everyone and, you know, obviously an oligarchy, especially apartheid, was a very uncomfortable situation for most of the country. And the transition, obviously you meant to have a slow transition into democracy. We didn't have that, if you ask me personally. I feel like we really ran with what we could and try to build an economy and build a country and a democracy quickly. And that's why we have a backsliding of today.
Right. Instead of like, let's say you're across a valley, right? On one side, it's the oligarchy. On the other side, it's a democracy. Instead of what most countries do, which is slowly build a bridge across the valley, you guys tried to like...
We threw a ladder and we're trying to get across.
You threw like a rope swing and you Tarzaned your way across the other side.
Pretty much.
In the end, you're falling short, kind of.
I mean, I do have to give credit where it's due. South African Constitution and various conferences that took place after 94 actually...
The Truth and Reconciliation?
Well, yes, the Truth and Reconciliation, and I think it's called the Sunset Conference. Don't quote me on that. That's really where they started putting together the Constitution, and were making various decisions of how to phase out the apartheid government. And this is where I think the transition to democracy took place, the phasing out of the apartheid government.
Oh, 100%. And like we said earlier, the Constitution is one of the best in the world. Our basis of democracy is there. We have a strong constitution, and the law itself is as democratic as you're going to get. But our institutions...
They didn't keep up with the times.
...are, I wouldn't say, efficient.
Right. This,
Well... And this is also like now stems to one of the main issues of South Africa today, this phasing out of the apartheid government. Because basically what I'm saying with this phasing out of the apartheid government is, yes, they're changing the institutional frameworks of South Africa in terms of laws, you know, reforming things so it could be more democratic. However, at the same time, this is also changing people within government. So... I'm not only talking about laws. I'm now talking about various statesmen and various people within government who are meant to maintain the infrastructure of South Africa. And the ANC was faced with a massive problem because the people who are maintaining South Africa and the infrastructure of South Africa, you know, came from the apartheid regime. And now they need to sort of bring in this just transition to democracy where there's equality. And they're like, we have to get rid of these people in government. And this was meant to take over, like, I think it was meant to go over like a 10-year time span where they're going to start getting rid of the various white peoples within the various institutions of government and start bringing in their own people. And the problem with bringing in their own people was that... Unfortunately, they weren't qualified enough to run the institutions of South Africa. And this is what is called, and this is a massive issue now taking place in South Africa, a lot of court cases, cadre deployment, where basically the ANC picks and chooses who they want to go where in government.
Right.
And we see this from last week as well, where we had another cabinet reshuffle.
Yes.
Right.
I think in the last, how many cabinet reshuffles have we had? Let's say 5 years.
It's probably, I mean, I'm just going to take a guess because it's, I would say about 3 or 4. I'm not sure exactly.
It's like last week I sent Alex this picture and I'm like, have you seen this? that we had another cabinet reshuffle.
Was this after she sent you her Formula One memes or before?
I don't send her, like, Formula One memes.
Oh, I'm special then. Okay. At least from, like, my outside American perspective, right? Okay. I know technically, you know, my opinion doesn't mean as much when it comes to countries like we talked about when we interviewed my dad, which is like when we asked him about Israel, he's like, oh, it's not really my place to talk
and,
about
and
that.
And it's the same, like I've said that in politics in America, I have no standpoint.
Same thing here. At least from my outside perspective, South Africa, at least current state, or at least with the transition it's still been going through for the past 30 years at least, reminds me a lot of what we saw in Eastern Europe and following the fall of the Soviet Union, where you had Ukraine and Belarus and Lithuania and Poland and all these other countries. The more west you got, kind of like East Germany, which and Czechoslovakia, now Czech Republic and Slovakia, those countries had been a different way beforehand. So they were able to go back to being more economically independent and better at it faster. But at least, you know, Belarus and Ukraine and especially Russia and even some countries in Central Asia like Kazakhstan and stuff, Borat, right? They're still...
Please don't do a Borat accent.
I'm not going to try. Sacha Baron Cohen is the only one who can do that properly. I can never do it justice. I do other accents. I can't do this one. At least to me, it seems a lot like that economic development where you're still seeing it really slow. It's still really slow coming in, and the institutions aren't able to keep up. Russia and Poland and these other countries are ranked as having some of the worst infrastructure in Europe because of this lack of economic development, and the institutions have not been able to keep up. And a lot of that stems from the government being the way it is.
So as well, South Africa is, if I'm not the or one of the most divided economies, most fractured, if I could put that, and equal as well. It's the point that why I was saying the Bantu education, why I brought that up, is that a lot of people today still have this divide of education, divide of living. You know, during the time of apartheid, white people would live in a certain place and non-white people would be living in
townships.
Yeah.
Townships, exactly. I don't know if... I think I taught you the word townships, no?
You did. Well, I also kind of learned it last year from a South African friend.
Okay.
He's not from your guys' regions, no.
Basically, they would live in a certain place. And after apartheid, a lot of people carried on living there.
Mm-hmm.
Not really... many people did move into the suburbs. But again, we have places like... now in South Africa, in Joburg particularly, where I'm from and Alex, we have places like Soweto... and Alexander Township, where are these very dense populated areas, which would have never happened if it was not for apartheid. And a lot of people see this still as this divide and like inequality. And nothing's been dealt with for the last 30 years for it. And you see people are done with it, and people are really gotten to the point where change either needs to happen or something else has to come into play, because people are just so done with waiting for this government who, again, our institutions don't function like they need to function. So we've gotten to this point where it's, well, where do we get the help? If our institutions, we don't have electricity, you know, we don't have a thriving, functioning government that's willing to help us. Where do we look? And people have really become, I wouldn't say the animosity, if that's the right word.
Towards the government?
Yeah.
I mean,
I want to say the word in slang, in South African, like slang, which is khatful, which is kind of like they've had enough.
Right.
I don't know why. I just want to say the word khatful. And that, I think, to me is the only way to describe it.
Well, I think khatful encapsulates South Africa right now. I can't really give a direct translation, but let's say people are incredibly tired of what's going on. Incredibly tired.
Seems understandable. I mean, at this point, if you can't turn to the government to do it, what often will happen, at least in, like, let's take an example from America. Pete Buttigieg, who is currently the Minister of Transportation for the Biden administration in America, he used to be the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. There were a lot of potholes in the roads in South Bend, Indiana. The roads were in a terrible situation. He never fixed the roads.
Okay.
What had to happen? Pizza Hut. Yes, you heard me right. The pizza company, Pizza Hut, had to come in and fix the roads in South Bend, Indiana, because that didn't happen. At this point, is it basically almost time for the citizens to start turning to private industry to get electricity and clean water and, you know, good roads and all the other infrastructure needed for, you know, them to survive and live well?
It's actually incredibly interesting that how, you know, what the government's meant to be maintaining,
mm-hmm.
where it sort of reaches a point where people are like, well, if you're not going to do the job, we're going to do the job now.
Yeah. Well, in South Africa, speaking of potholes, since February this year,
okay.
they have counted more than 25 million potholes on South African roads.
Dear God.
Just for you to understand that Pizza Hut could not fix 25 million potholes.
Mm, who could fix 25 million potholes?
Elon Musk.
I was about to say, South Africa's own Elon Musk could come in and fix the potholes.
Well, then again, our president, current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, how much is he worth?
He's like worth $500 million.
And for, right. like, there was, too, also, like, the thing in South Africa at the moment, which I think is, I wouldn't say comical, I think it's more sad, is that besides the ANC, you have a few other political parties that mm-hmm. really clash and don't get on. Two of them being the Democratic Alliance, the DA, and the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing to me is the fact never since the EFF has come in to politics have the DA and the EFF agreed on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything at all. However, I think it was a State of the Nation last month that came out. They came in there, obviously, address the nation. Both sides were talking about the same thing, that something needs to change. And they were saying, I don't know, Julius Malema made a comment that this is our president's side hustle. And this is his side job because he has all the money. He doesn't need to do this.
Right.
For him, like, if I could put the word party politics, this is for him, he doesn't need to be here and deal with this.
It's a waste of his time. Ever since,
like, Ramaphosa has come in, we've seen no changes and we've seen no action, as opposed to our previous president who is on trial for corruption.
And many other things, let's just
say. Many other things. But Jacob Zuma is known for his corruption and the fact that he built a house on the taxpayers' money.
Right. So kind of the crux of all of this is, and yeah, I know this isn't exactly a debate episode. This is, you know, an education episode, right?
We can still debate if you want.
There's not much debate here. I feel like we're all kind of in agreement about what's happening in the country since you're just looking at the facts and it's logical deduction from that point. But you kind of have to ask yourself at this point, is South Africa about to, like, it's already very clear South Africa.
Are you going to ask my favorite question?
I'm going to ask your favorite question.
Is South Africa democratic backsliding?
Let me build up to it here for a second. Okay. So we can already see South Africa experiencing some form of democratic backsliding, and the fact that its institutions are keeping up. And in fact, it's kind of happening worldwide with democracies as a whole,
mm-hmm.
where we're seeing this sort of shift away from full democracy like we used to see in the early 2000s and late 90s and stuff, where it seemed like everybody's doing democracy, like we talked about the end of history mm-hmm. type of deal following the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
Is South Africa in danger of going not just a democratic backslide, but a democratic, like, landslide type of deal backwards?
I like that.
Thank you. I'm trademarking that.
I will... If you had asked me this before Corona, I mm-hmm. would have said there was a possibility of change. I think Corona, particularly, has done more damage in South Africa than any kind of good. I think that South Africa, what it is now with COVID and its effects, have led it completely to democratic backslide. I think that, obviously, there's other reasons for it happening, but again, with a social divide and this economic divide that was present, and then you throw in Corona and lockdown into the mix,
mm-hmm.
it to me destroyed South Africa. I wasn't there personally, but I saw it through my family, and I'm sure Alex can tell you what it was like in South Africa, where you couldn't leave your house. And a lot of people, again, are living in these townships where there's 7-8 people in one home. You know, South Africa is known for... I think the number one country in the world of rape. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got domestic violence on the rise, and you're putting people in these homes. You know, people aren't happy. There's unemployment through the roof in South Africa. And to me, one of the main driving factors currently, besides obviously Eskom and the fact that we have no no electricity. We have the problem at the moment with water and reservoirs, and people aren't getting water. I think that it's already democratic backsliding, and I don't think there's any way right now mm-hmm. that we can pull it out from that.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
No, so I do agree that South Africa has been in a democratic backsliding. It's been taking place, I'd say, since about 2008, when Jacob Zuma, former president of South Africa, came into power.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this infamous conference in the province of Limpopo, the northernmost province of South Africa, bordering Zimbabwe, and an area called Nasrec. Nasrec, mm-hmm. I think it's a town. I'm not sure exactly.
I think it is a town.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this Nasrec conference in 2008. And in this 2008 Nasrec conference, Jacob Zuma was brought into power, pretty much. And they sort of, like, how should I say, deposed Thabo Mbeki.
Mm-hmm.
The previous president before yeah. Jacob Zuma, out of power. And Jacob Zuma made many various decisions with the agreement of the ANC party, because obviously he wouldn't come to power if he didn't have allies in the ANC party, to weaken the institutional frameworks of South Africa. And there was actually a very interesting thing that I was looking at that they did at this Nasrec conference, is they got rid of a sort of like a financial corruption force that was sort of like, it was independent from the government.
Mm-hmm.
So it couldn't, the ANC had no influence over it whatsoever, called the Scorpions. And they were responsible for a lot of the, arrests, of corrupt politicians before that. And Jacob Zuma, because he knew he was under the chopping block there, with his many corruption charges, such as, the Denel contract, which is, South Africa's, parastatal for defense, where they did a huge amount of defense research. He was involved in a lot of corrupt contracts there, going into the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, right.
And he also had many
Allegations.
Yeah, rape allegations. Yeah.
Sexual assault rape allegations.
Right.
So he knew he was in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other ANC members also knew they were in a lot of trouble because they were also corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they voted to get rid of this Scorpion Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And this was basically one of the key moments to me where South Africa properly went into democratic backsliding. Because this is where you can see where the executive of the country, the leaders of the country, are starting to get involved in the judiciary. And that's very dangerous, because now they're pretty much taking power over the judiciary, and they can basically make themselves immune to the law.
Again, I think that's also what we discussed this
last
time
with Neva,
and how, again, the judiciary is your watchdog.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also what's going on in Israel. And this whole thing of the judiciary is meant to keep your checks and balances. And where does that hold you as a country when you no longer have that, because your absolute power of your executive is now in the hands and in the pockets of the judiciary.
Right. It's also like we talked about when we debated the judicial reform. So we mm-hmm. had that whole episode going over the five main points of them, where we talked about you can take away this power from the judiciary.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to give it to someone else.
Yeah.
There is the people always talk about, oh, if you take power away from something, you have to give it something else. That's not true. You can dissipate power by spreading it so far over so many little areas, it practically doesn't exist. And it seems to me, at least, like South Africa is almost at a crossroads, basically, like, especially because you mentioned COVID. I think COVID opened the eyes of a lot of people around the world in mm-hmm. a lot of different countries to the situation that their countries in.
Yeah.
Here in Israel is a good example with like the constant recurring elections. We're like, we had this guy in office for a really long time. what should we do about it type of deal.
But with other reasons, but yeah.
There are
yeah.
other reasons, but that was one of the big ones. And South Africa, it seems to me, at least kind of has a choice. It can, if it continues along this path, it'll democratic landslide.
Like, I just think that at the moment we have... The thing is, you obviously you can't go back to what we were.
Correct.
That's not the case. But also the thing that I think that scares me is that where are we off to? Where are we sliding towards?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it looks like to me another Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
I'm actually slightly more optimistic because...
Interesting.
Well, you always say you want to go home and fix South Africa.
Yes. So basically what we've seen in South Africa is basically how the institutions have failed so heavily that their reach is not covering the entirety of the South African population anymore. And these institutions we can put into also the category of the South African parastatals, or the state-owned enterprises, which Zara was trying to explain with Eskom, electricity company, Transnet, the logistics and transport company in South Africa, Denel, the defense company, Sanral, the road company, a whole bunch of others. Let's just carry on. Their service delivery is not reaching most of South Africa anymore because of the ill maintenance and the collapse of the infrastructure. And this is also the same with law enforcement. The police are pretty much paralyzed. They're unable to access certain parts of South Africa because it's too dangerous. And with this, like what I would like to call an institutional backslide, where the government can't really control most of South Africa anymore, people are starting to take their lives into their own hands and are starting to create sort of like, how should I say, communities. Or what I've seen on YouTube recently, I watched this channel called Warning Shot, but that's a whole different ball game. They term it as exclaves. So basically what I think is going to happen is that with this democratic backsliding, major parts of South Africa are going to begin to be sort of governed by the people there. It's not going to be a national government anymore. South Africa is going to start to fragment. It's not going to happen like, like South Africa will still stay as a country, but the government in Pretoria, the executive, won't have power over the country anymore. And a lot of these communities are going to start to be able to maintain their own sort of power.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of optimism, because Jonah decided yesterday in class, we were told that we need to start using ChatGPT in that specific class.
Right.
Obviously, we're doing e-government and everything. Mm-hmm. So Jonah decided to ask ChatGPT to write a poem on South Africa. So I think I want to read it.
You want to read it?
I want to read it.
This is gonna be. First of all, by the way, it wrote it so fast. Usually ChatGPT like takes a second to load. It was out. It was nothing. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So, in South Africa, where the sun sets ablaze, and golden grasses sway in the gentle breeze, where the lions roar and the elephants play, and the vibrant culture fills the air with ease. The land is rich, and the mountains high and wide, and oceans blue that stretch beyond the eye, where dolphins dance and whales glide, and the beauty of nature never seems to die. From the dusty plains of the Karoo to the rolling hills of the Drakensberg, the landscape paints a picture anew, as if a masterpiece from a creative surge. The people as warm as the sun, a blend of cultures with each of their own flair. In harmony, they live as one, with a spirit that's both bold and rare, from the bustling streets of the city to the rural villages that dot the land. The heartbeat of the country's unity echoes in the rhythm of the people's hands. South Africa is a place of wonder, a tapestry of color, culture, and history, where the beauty and resilience are like thunder, and the rich of Ubuntu is a mystery.
That was, by the way, surprisingly really good.
I know.
For a poem.
Wow.
That was, I have a tear in my eye. Shed single tears, eagle caws in the distance. Somber music plays. I can set the scene, set the mood. Yeah. That was
good.
You also did a really good reading of that. Nice job, Zara.
Thank you.
Anyway.
I think,
yeah, Alex, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. You two, you guys both, great duo, first of all.
Question is, did you learn anything?
I think I really did. You've expanded my knowledge beyond movies.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
Do you now think tap water and bottled water should be a commodity?
Zara, don't do this to me. Don't guilt trip me after this episode. God.
I had to try. I had to try.
Hang on. I'll pull a press secretary on this one. I'll circle back to that one.
I thought you were going to be like, I plead the fifth.
That's the George Bush answer. I plead the fifth. Anyway, at the end of the day, there is no winner or loser. We will agree to disagree. I'm Jonah.
And I'm Zara.
And this is the Friendly Face-Off on Audioversity.
All our shows and podcasts available online on our website and on all podcast platforms. Search Audioversity.